Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Little Fish, the show where we put down our facts and we get the facts that have been sent to podcastandqi.com by you. Andy has gone through the mailbox. He's taken out the very, very best facts that you've sent, and we're going to go through them today. I'm James Harkin. I'm joined by Daniel Schreiber, Andrew Hunter-Murray, and a whole bunch of facts. Who's got one?
I've got one.
Go for it.
This is actually a very nice, rare example of a double-headed fact. So it's the same, it's one fact, but two people have sent it in.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So there's a place near Chicago, the Argonne National Lab.
Okay.
Have you heard of it? Yeah. It's a nuclear, nuclear research, US research laboratory.
I'm going to say it straight away. Yeah. It's named by Mr. Argonne.
Oh, how did I not see that coming?
It's named after a forest, the Argonne Forest, okay. Not the chemical element. Anyway, that is not the main fact.
Oh, really? Because my heckles are up for those at the moment. I'm looking out for them wherever I'm going.
So there's a forest surrounding the lab,
yeah,
which is called Waterfall Glen, right?
No. Oh, geez. Named after Mr. Waterfall, or named after someone called Glen?
Seymour Waterfall.
Okay.
Was a local forest commissioner. And apparently the waterfalls are truly rubbish. Like, there is water going downwards, but they're not good waterfalls. And that's because they're not meant to be waterfalls, because it's named after Seymour Waterfall. So we're off the blocks.
Yeah, no, very good. You're going to have to do better than that, Andy, I'm afraid. First facts of the show.
I really thought I'd get it nice and fast.
Nah.
No.
It really is a whole new show that we're making now that you've forced into our existing show. It's just...
I'm actually a bit worried, because we're going to record a Drop Us a Line after this.
Yeah.
Genuinely... I'd say 30% of the content people have sent in is just names of things that you think are named for an obvious reason, but are not. I don't know what we're going to do, because we've got too many to make it a good show.
Well, if you want to spend your hard-earned money hearing us discuss names, patreon.com/clubfish, everyone.
Yeah.
Can I do a fact?
Yeah, please. Okay. A normal one, please.
This has been sent in by Stephen Martinez, who says, in 2012, a man named Niles Gammons was arrested for drunk driving in Urbana, Ohio at 1:08 a.m. He was arrested and released on bail. An hour later, at 1:08 a.m., the same cop arrested the same man for drunk driving. Daylight savings.
Yeah, it must be, right?
Daylight savings.
It's always the criminal. It's daylight savings.
If it weren't
okay,
for that,
hear me out, guys. Daylight savings cop.
Yes.
Only comes out twice a year to deal with little things like this.
That's really good. It's the longest hour. Is what is the series name? The longest hour.
And the second series, the shortest hour.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's not.
It just doesn't do anything. It's just him asleep.
And you play the same episode twice right after each other.
That's brilliant.
On the hour. Yeah.
Is it shot from different angles, like Rashomon?
Oh, like Back to the Future 2. Like, does he see himself?
Yes, or Kurosawa's masterpiece, Rashomon. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've all got our cultural Overton window, haven't we?
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, slam on Zemeckis, who delivered one of the greatest series ever.
It's a brilliant film, Back to the Future 2.
Thank you, and your one as well, I'm sure.
Okay, here's a fact from Eric. Eric says, despite the absurd difference in distances, it takes 4 times longer for a character to appear on your screen after you tap your keyboard than it takes to send that keystroke across the Atlantic.
Oh, wow. What?
So when you say a character, I was thinking like...
Daylight saving cop.
Yeah.
No,
a letter.
Yeah, like, a letter. Yeah. Like, or a number, in fact. Or a symbol.
Okay. Yeah. So sorry, when I type that...
When you type that, it basically comes onto your screen in about 200 milliseconds.
Okay.
And that's because there's a load of, like, according to Eric, invisible code that happens between your finger and the screen. So it has to basically, it's not just you press that and your screen automatically knows what you're pressing. It has to turn the press into some zeros and ones, which then goes into your computer, which then turns it into the actual character itself.
Yes.
And you're saying that goes across the Atlantic?
That goes from your finger to your computer in about 200 milliseconds.
Yeah.
But just for the information to go across the Atlantic in an undersea cable, it takes about 50 milliseconds.
Wow. Stunning.
Which is amazing.
That is amazing.
I've never noticed a lag after typing H.
Well, the reason is your reaction time is longer than 200 milliseconds. People have done like tests online where you kind of check people's reaction times, and it seems like the average is about 273 milliseconds. Okay. So anything quicker than that is kind of pointless.
Okay.
There's no point going faster than that because no one, unless you're like a Formula One driver or an elite gamer, in which case your reaction time might be about 100 milliseconds. Admittedly, elite gamers do use computers quite a lot.
Yeah. Are they better at responding to emails? And Formula One drivers.
They would be like... better. They would notice the email arrived quicker.
Yes, it does find me well, thank you. You know. Do you want another one?
Yeah.
This one comes from Natalie from Toronto, who says, I just paused in my workday because I came across this fantastic fact and had to send it your way. There's a town in Ontario called Barrie, right?
Oh, it's not named after someone called Barrie,
no,
is it?
No.
You see what you've done to yourself. You see who you've become on this show.
And the, it's got different council wards in it. You know, a ward is a little administrative area.
Yeah.
And in Barrie, it's just, it looks like it's just ward 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay. Okay.
So anyway, there's a ward called Ward 4 in the town of Barrie. And the former Ward 4 councillor for Barrie is a guy called Barrie Ward. Okay. And I looked up Mr. Ward, and he's a regular contributor to Barrie Today. Yeah, it's about the town of Barrie, not about people called Barrie.
What is Barrie Today? Is it an online thing?
It's a website about Barrie.
Oh, okay.
The town of Barrie.
It's not a newspaper or anything like that.
Well, I think it's a news website.
Okay.
Well, what's the difference these days?
You know what I read about today? This is the reason I ask you.
Okay.
In America, they used to have a lot of newspapers where you could only buy them if you bought another newspaper, which this newspaper was inside of.
So,
if you get like a Sunday broadsheet newspaper in the UK, it will have supplements in.
Yeah.
Well, in America, for some of them, the supplement would be an actual different newspaper, and they wouldn't even be related to each other. Your normal newspaper that you buy might be a right-wing newspaper, and the supplement one might be a left-wing one.
Oh,
and it was because basically there was a problem with like newspapers were dying out in the 70s. Obviously, they're still struggling. But in America, they came up with some new laws that meant that people would share printing presses and share printing costs. And so one newspaper would print it, but they would be forced to print another newspaper as well and put it inside their paper.
That's really clever.
Yeah.
Because if you live in a little town, maybe all the copies of the Times that go here also have the Barrie Gazette, for example.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really clever. And it also, for some people, they liked it because it meant that you get different viewpoints. So if you get the Daily Mail and the Guardian at the same time, then you can see different parts of it.
Yes.
But the last one of them, which is in Las Vegas, I think is about to shut down because there's some legal thing going on right now.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Natalie from Toronto has a bit of praise for you, James.
Thank you. Cool. Was it about that fact that I just said?
It wasn't, but it was about your Toronto knowledge.
Toronto, you mean?
We do, in fact, pronounce the city Toronto. I was very impressed that he knew that.
Yeah.
My accent is so strong that I've had to change my pronunciation to Toronto when talking to British people in order for them to understand me.
How interesting. I've never been to Toronto, but I've just heard people...
You sound like you're born and bred there, though.
All right, well, let's move away from praise for James. Let's get to another fact here. This is from Jonathan Hughes, who writes, this may be a good fact for James. Thank you, Jonathan.
I'm actually liking what this show's become now.
This is a sort of complicated tennis fact, which it is kind of interesting. Since 2021, Carlos Alcaraz and Yannick Sinner have played each other 16 times on tour. Alcaraz has won 10 of the matches and Sinner 6. Alcaraz has won 26 sets and Sinner has won 23 sets. And in that time, they've played 3,302 points. So who's won more points, Andy?
If Alcaraz has won more games, 10-6, I would presume Alcaraz has won more
points. Both tied on the exact same points,
really?
1,651.
And exactly.
It's exactly. And it's the quirk of tennis that can happen. Like, you play tennis, James, and you play tennis, Andy.
Yeah, Andy plays it more than I do.
Yeah, and the other one, yeah. The other Andy Murray. I didn't mean Anna and the other one. She's been gone so long.
She's really good at tennis.
Yeah. But you could effectively have a very close game, but lose it 6-love, 6-love, right? It's just you might have got down to a... Exactly.
The same happens in all sports, I would say. Like in snooker, for instance, you can lose lots of really close frames, but then win ones where you win by 100 points.
Yeah.
Or in football even, your goal difference, you could be right at the top of the table, but have a negative goal difference because all the games you've won were 1-0, but all the ones that you've lost were 0-10.
Right. Yeah.
Sounds like that player Sinner is the prisoner of Alcaraz.
Very nice.
Yes. I don't know anymore because sometimes when I make a joke, it goes really badly.
I actually think, Andy, that you would be perfect in like a tabloid sports department.
I would love,
because you're not going to get bogged down with knowledge. You can just go for the puns without like worrying about whether they make sense or not.
Absolutely.
And in this case, it made perfect sense.
I would be flipping immediately to your article and Barry today just to get that Murray gold.
Thank you. Mm. Well, that's very nice. Oh, thank you. Let's
yeah,
have
enough
your
compliments
hosting.
About Andy. Daniel Studenmund of Binghamton, New York, writes about the famous mathematician Harold Scott MacDonald Coxeter. Who we've mentioned on the show before, actually. But he said he was named so not to be mistaken for a ship. He was very nearly named Harold MacDonald Scott Coxeter, or HMS Coxeter, but they decided to flip around his middle name, so he's not HMS, he's HSM. Daniel says he wanted to give Coxeter some love after you rudely mispronounced his name in the episode of Little Fish.
Oh, well,
and I think I might have done it again, guys. It must be Coxeter.
I guess so. That's so weird. I had a fact about ship naming that
Did
I didn't mention just now, which is that Barry, the town, is named after an English general called Robert Barry, who commanded a ship called HMS Cockburn. I suspect Coburn. And also HMS Brilliant, which is a nice name for a naval ship, I think.
That was a good name.
That is good.
HMS Brilliant.
Yeah.
Can I tell you more about Harold Scott MacDonald Coxeter?
Yes.
So I went onto his entry in the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, and here is a paragraph from the end of his article. A gaunt, bird-like, ascetic-looking man, he attributed his longevity to his vegetarianism, standing on his head, even at the age of 90, for 15 minutes each morning, a daily exercise regime of 50 press-ups, a nightly cocktail of Kahlua, peach snaps, and soya milk, and an abiding fascination with his subject.
How interesting.
What a guy.
Kahlua,
peach snaps.
That's coffee liqueur, isn't it? Coffee, peach, and what kind of milk?
Soy milk.
I've got to say, that feels like the one rogue element that would not keep you alive.
That's the toilet visit element, isn't it? Yeah.
That could be why humans have never lived past like 120, because this is the trick, but no one can stomach the Kahlua peach snaps and soy milk.
Paul McCartney stands on his head for 5 minutes every day as well.
Does
five?
He?
Yeah.
Lightweight.
Yeah. I've never tried it.
Is it as good for you to stand on your head as it is to hang upside down? Which I know is good for you.
Is it?
I think so. I think Dan Brown does it, doesn't he?
He used to do it to alleviate the writer's block that he had, right?
Right.
He would hang by upside down boots from a pole. I don't know if that was just author fluff to...
Might have been author fluff.
Yeah, to make his interviews better.
But you think Paul McCartney does do it?
Yeah, he does it for at least 5 minutes. That's all I get to see before I'm dragged out of his garden. But he's definitely clocked five.
And what does he do? Does he have like boots holding him upside down, or does he use his wings?
See, I know the signs now. After 12 years, I've learned, give James enough rope.
But also unencumbered by any knowledge about the Beatles.
That's what's most surprising. You've made more Beatles gags on our show than anyone else, and you've never heard them.
James has memorized a list of all the Beatles songs.
I've done that for so many different subjects,
yeah,
just in case it comes up.
Quite right. Shall I give you another one?
Yes.
This is from Dan Gudgeon. over 90% of the UK's unique species don't live in the UK.
What?
Riddle me this.
What do you mean by unique? As in endemic to here? Yeah.
90%. Okay, so it's British territories?
Yeah, it's just overseas territories in the UK.
Where have we still got? Where has Britain still got?
Oh, loads of places.
List them. Give me one.
St. Helena.
Isle of Man.
Falklands.
Okay. Yeah.
Chagos still, although we haven't signed the deal yet. But like
the Scilly Isles.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if these are all territories as opposed to dependencies or crown dependencies. Like, there are all sorts of categories. But the UK's overseas territories are around the world, and some of them are, you know, a tiny squib of land, but then a huge bit of ocean around it.
So Australia.
Commonwealth. Thank you for listening, everyone.
We are hoping to tour there again one
we
day.
Are. Yeah. We are. And it's from the government website, the biodiversity there.
Really good.
I found some species which exist only in these overseas territories.
Oh. Kangaroo.
The Virgin Islands mute frog. Mm-hmm. The broadnose seven gill shark. The
ascension. Named after Andrew Broadnose, of course.
That's right. And Stephanie Sevengill. They were a married couple of.
It's a double barrel name.
Yeah.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, I've got one more here. This is from Mr. Geeky. And Mr. Geeky says, as you almost certainly know, many sea creatures have unihemispheric sleep. That is, one half of the brain sleeps while the other one remains awake.
Okay.
Yeah, we all knew that, right?
Dolphins.
Come on, guys. Yeah. Most land mammals sleep with their whole brains at once. Mm-hmm. Humans,
yeah.
For instance.
Yeah.
But Mr. Geeky says, fur seals do unihemispheric sleep when in water and full brain sleep when on land.
What? Wow. That's so cool.
Isn't it?
So they've got no predator.
Oh, they have predators.
In one place.
In the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why they're half.
Oh, killer whales eat them, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah,
they do.
But then they're safe on land so they can have a full night's sleep.
Gosh.
And actually, like, tourists in South Africa will go and see these fur sharks being eaten by great white sharks.
Can you say fur seals?
Fur seals. What did I say?
Fur sharks.
Fur sharks.
Fur sharks sound kind of cute, actually.
Mm.
Fur sharks.
That's a trick, isn't it? You get close enough to stroke them and they'll have your hand off. Fur seals, yeah. If you go into South Africa, you can see the great white sharks eating them. And that's because it's the majesty of nature. People like to see this. Obviously, it's not great for the seals.
Yeah.
But they have come up with a new way of dealing with it called mobbing. And basically, a load of seals will harass this great white shark as it's coming up and say, no, 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 and kind of nibble around his face.
Oh.
And it really works.
That's very brave.
Yeah.
That's very brave.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Seals are braver than I thought they were.
I think the thing is with them is like it's either that or you get eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be tempted to just sort of distance myself from the group and say,
hang out with a slower seal.
Exactly.
Yeah. But where are you? If you're away from the group, you're susceptible to have no one help
you. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You want to be in the middle of the group, really.
This is why I was fired from that union.
And Arthur Scargill has got himself another enormous pay rise. More biting satire. Okay, that is enough of your facts. As amazing as they are, I say this all the time, but your facts are so good, we can't help but be excited when they come into the inbox. And so send us some more. Send them to podcast@qi.com and Andy will winnow out the best for the next episode of Little Fish. But we must do one more thing. And that is hand out custodianship of some of our facts to people who are members of the Friend of the Podcast tier on Patreon. So, Dan, can you give us a fact, please?
Okay, here we go. This fact is now under the custodianship of Laurel Evans. And your fact is that in 1710, the boys of Winchester College rioted over insufficient beer rations.
Very nice.
Very good. And yeah. And it'll be, it's presented as a nice story now, but they'll probably have killed and eaten three teachers, and eight groundskeepers.
Yes.
And I went to Winchester. I visited Winchester College quite recently.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I went past it. I didn't go in.
Okay.
But it's very, it's obviously, it's one of the oldest sort of poshest schools there is.
Yeah. So
it's right next to the house where I think Jane Austen died.
Oh, I'm not believing you on any of these people who died in certain houses anymore. Not after Rod Hull Gate.
Oh yeah,
that's a
good
true.
Point. Yeah.
So did she definitely die there?
I didn't even know that she definitely died. She might still be trading. Not sure. Let's have another one.
Well, anyway, you drove past it.
I walked past it.
Great story.
It's a good.
Yeah. You got to up your game now. Anna's back, Andy. She will not suffer these half anecdotes.
Won't accept these in the way that we do.
That's fair. Let's have another fact.
Yes, please.
How about this one? This one goes out to Julie King Humphreys. Terrific name. And your fact now, Julie Forever, is that the first man to discover the clitoris in 1559 was Columbo.
Yes.
Was this your fact, Dan?
This was my fact, yeah. I think we did this at a live show. I feel like an Up the Creek memory coming into my head.
As it were.
Could have been. could be so.
How did you find it? Was it difficult to find?
I sometimes forget that when you ask me a question, it's pointless what I'm saying in between.
I don't even listen to the answers.
Yeah, it's just fluff to get you to where you need to be.
James is playing tennis against a wall here. Yeah. You can't win. Yeah.
Yeah, good fact. He was an old scientist, wasn't he? Columbo.
Okay, here is another fact. This one now is under the custodianship of Matt Janaway. Matt, your fact is that for 200 years after the tomato reached England, they were grown entirely for ornamental reasons.
Funny.
Yeah, because they're a member of the nightshade family.
Yes.
So we had nightshades in Europe, which were very poisonous. The tomato came over, and when it's growing, it looks like it might be one of these poisonous plants. Yeah. So we thought it might be poisonous as well.
Yeah.
And no one really trusted it. I mean, reasonably, right?
Yeah, completely. Was the same true of potatoes as well?
Yeah, the same family.
So it's potato and tomato and tomato were all thought to be unsafe.
Well, just the two that are actual words.
Oh, yeah.
You know those aren't four things, right?
I keep being upsold at the supermarket. I'm just trying to buy tomatoes, but they sell me tomatoes. You know, they're twice the price, but they are imported from America. So.
All right, let's get to another one. Congratulations, Sally Baker, because you are now the custodian of the fact that NASA is planning on giving the moon a moon. This was another one of my facts, and I guess this was so long ago, I don't know if it's now got a new moon. I think we would have heard.
We'd have heard.
Yeah.
NASA went a bit quiet for a while, but they've come roaring back. So I imagine they're still working on it.
When the astronauts went to the moon very recently, do we know which one they went to?
This one goes out to Mark Waddy, and it's that the man who played Sherlock Holmes, Basil Rathbone, spent the First World War dressed as a tree. Basil Rathbone, very famous actor, most famous for being Sherlock Holmes, and during the First World War, he needed to be crawling towards enemy lines for reconnaissance purposes.
Oh, wow.
So I think he was a moving tree, which, okay. What is the point at that point?
Well, no, because, okay, so if you go to the Imperial War Museum, I don't know if you've been, but they have a fantastic exhibition on all the ingenuity and all the amazing innovations for the wars, and you can see that tree there. The idea was that during night, they went and cut down an existing tree and they'd remodeled it so that in the daylight, it was still there. But it was this new hollow tree and they would have soldiers in there. And so you can see a tree in that museum, which is very, very clever.
Okay, here is another fact. This one is now under the custodianship of Oliver Porter. Oliver, your fact is that Abraham Lincoln hid important documents in his stovepipe hat.
I love this fact. Funny. It's such good storage space that no one would ever think of. How did we not just naturally know that he did that?
I think what's great about it is because we all associate him so much with that hat.
Yeah.
And just to learn that there was an extra thing that was happening under there is really exciting.
Yeah.
But I think, did he not always wear his hat, or was it that he didn't always have a beard? That was
the
beard.
Yeah, he only had the beard in the last few years of his life, I think.
Some child wrote to him saying, "You'd look quite nice with a beard," and he grew it.
I think that's it. But no, I think the hat was for a while.
And he was like 6 foot 5 or something.
He was a tall guy.
And then he had the hat on top of it. So
he must have been about 7 foot tall with the hat.
Yeah, it must have been awful.
Do you think?
Well, just getting through doors.
Yeah. You're the president, aren't you? So you can probably have a door rebuilt.
I think instead of building the lintel of the door higher, I would make a little ditch at the bottom of the door so that you go lower.
That's a really good
idea.
It's
like a little ha-ha. Yeah.
Much cleverer.
Who's the most hatted world leader you can think of these days?
Alive right now.
It's probably Trump and the baseball caps. Because he wears those a lot.
Yeah.
I've never seen Keir Starmer wearing a hat.
No.
Macron, no.
No.
Friedrich Merz, no. Narendra Modi, don't think so.
No, Putin doesn't. Zelensky doesn't. Arafat was the first person who came into my head, which shows where my cultural timings come from.
Yeah, you've met James. I'm going to say it. We've just done a main show, and we've done this show. The number of references you've made to John Major,
I know,
really, really quite old school references.
You know what? I've been out of the country for a few weeks, and I think it's reset my timing, so I've forgotten about all of modern culture.
It's like you've had a bonk on the head. There's only one answer for that. It's another bonk on the head. Come here.
Now, you see, the problem is, in my 1980s and 90s mindset, bonk means having sex with someone.
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah.
That's what Andy suggested.
Another fact?
Yeah. Yes. This one is going out to Dayton Keneally, and your fact now is that monorails were originally horse-drawn.
Very nice.
This was the my horse jobs period of No Such Thing as a Fish.
What was that?
I was obsessed over the number of jobs that horses used to have slowly went out.
They used to do everything, didn't they?
They used to carry vacuum cleaners everywhere. They used to be used in theater when they run on treadmills. You know, there was a lot of horse jobs back in the day.
Yeah.
And
it's sad now.
Yeah, now you just see them. If you go to like one of those farms that children are allowed to feed the animals, you see them there.
Yes.
And occasionally in horse racing, but we don't really agree with that.
No.
Any more horse jobs you want to talk about?
I can't remember. I thought I had a lot of horse jobs, but I can't remember them now. I was just
racking
through
my head. Mentioned the three that were in the archive.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You've got perfect recollection of headline fact and then supplementary facts coming off the back of it.
I just remember my horse job period.
No one else does. No one thinks, oh, that classic bit of fish where Dad just talked about horse jobs for 18 months. That didn't happen.
Well, I remember in the 80s, we used to have horses that we'd bring around. What do you call those people who would collect old bits of iron and stuff?
Oh, rag and bone, man.
Rag and bone, then. Around where I used to live, you used to have horses taking those guys.
You
around.
Didn't?
Yeah.
In your memory?
In the 80s, yeah.
Your living memory?
Yes.
Rag and bone men.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, as well, we had rag and bone men when I was in my 20s in Bolton.
What?
Yeah. They were mostly like when the travelling community would come in, and they would come round the Ginnells and just ask if we had any bits, but they would shout rag and bone.
That's stunning. I didn't think rag and bone was still trading that late. I associated it with the 40s, 50s.
Yeah, I mean, they were on the way out in the 80s and 90s.
They weren't recruiting heavily, were they? No, right, okay.
And then, of course, there's Rag and Bone Man, the singer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but he's not... That's just a name, isn't it?
No, that was his original job.
Get out.
No, it's not.
No. That's very good.
Have you been on a horse, Andy? I know James has.
I have been on a horse.
Have you?
Do you know what? I've been on a horse the same number of times James has, which is once.
Same here. All right.
Guys, just don't go on about it all the time. One last one, Andy.
Yes. This one goes out to Marka Anderson. The Great Smog of 1952 was so bad that blind people led sighted people home from the train station.
Really good.
Amazing.
Oh,
because the air used to be so filthy in London and there were these increasingly severe smogs over the 40s and 50s. And
yeah.
I think 1952 was when it got so bad that no one could see anything for about 3 days.
Yeah. P-supers.
P-supers, exactly.
Yeah.
And just a bit like people were falling into the Thames. It was really bad. You know, people were having a horrible time of it. And I think that's when they thought, maybe we shouldn't burn coal right in the middle of the city. Maybe we should move it out.
I was reading Michael Palin's diaries recently, and while they were doing Python, there was huge electricity cuts due to union things. And so it's all these tales of while they're writing that everyone would be writing by candlelight in 1969/70.
Yeah.
Can I just say, there was a lot of power cuts when I was a kid as well.
Yeah, but I don't know. For some reason, that feels weird to me that London would be going through that in the 70s as a decision as opposed to a genuine power cut. They were turning it off as a matter of action.
I see. When they did the three-day week, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. James, what was the general strike like?
There was definitely strikes going on when I was a kid. I remember all the kids' TV shows, they would stop being shown during the summer holidays because there was industrial action and they just show other crap instead.
Mm. Why?
As in children also have to suffer through this industrial. There's no reason why you guys should get to watch Rainbow while we're having a hard time.
Yeah. I just have really solid memories of not being able to watch cartoons because there was industrial action happening in the country.
Mr. Ben, he was in the union.
Yeah, he's in all the unions.
That's the best Mr. Ben joke you hear on a modern British podcast.
I have no idea what that means, but it sounded great.
You're in the presence of greatness, I assure you.
It sounded awesome.
Okay, guys, that is enough. That is enough of our facts and, of course, enough of your facts for the day. We have one more thing to say, and that is thank you so much to Marka, Dayton, Oliver, Mark, Sally, Matt, Julie, Laurel, and Katie. Thank you so much for becoming custodians, and thank you for becoming friends of the podcast. We really do appreciate anyone who goes onto our Patreon and joins on any level, and even the people who come and join up for free. It's a really good way to support the podcast. But another way to support the podcast is listening and coming back on Friday for a new episode. So for now, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Andy.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from Dan Schreiber.
Oh, yes, goodbye.
We will see you again on Friday. Bye.
A lovely tribute to the two Ronnies there, who you will remember very well, James.
I do remember them well.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.